This is the Wealthability for CPAs show. Better clients, better practice, better life. Here's Tom Wheelwright.
Welcome to the Wealthability show for CPAs, where we're always discovering how to build better clients, a better practice, and a better life. This is Tom Wheelwright, your host, founder, and CEO of the Wealthability Network. So the question is, how do you actually take control and make a difference in your own success rather than being subject to the whims of other people? How do you make sure that you're really doing the right thing and the right thing for your clients, the right things for your profession, the right things for your growth? Today, we're going to discover how to really take control of our professional success. And CPAs, we love to be in control. So it's a perfect topic for this group, I believe. And we have the perfect guest for this, Dr. Alan Patterson, who's really all about a blueprint for success and for leadership. So Alan, thank you so much for joining us. And please, if you would, just give us a little of your background.
Well, thank you, Tom. It'll take 3 minutes for people to figure out that I'm not a CPA and didn't grow up in this world. And I will tell you and your listeners that during a workshop one time, someone said, oh, yeah, that's part of GAP. And I wrote GAP up on a flip chart and just pretty much got booed out of the room. So I got my comeuppance on that. I've been in the leadership development field for many years, gray hair, balding, 40 years. And during that time, I've been privileged to work with people in your profession and probably your listeners' profession by doing workshops with AICPA and the Business Learning Institute. I'm a leadership development guy. That's really what I've done my entire career. I've had opportunity to work with some great companies, some big ones, Anheuser-Busch, Johnson & Johnson, Hewlett-Packard. I've worked with a small public accounting firm here locally in Wisconsin, who's growing by leaps and bounds. I think I understand your world a little bit. I'm not limited to just finance and accounting. I've done a lot of work in the biotech area. I can tell you the groups that I seem to enjoy and resonate with the most, Tom, are the ones that have very high expectations for technical competence. Mm-hmm. And then I don't call them soft skills, but it's that additional skill set that's needed and what that looks like and how you acquire it. So, I mean, consulting, coaching, what doesn't a consultant do these days?
Right. Well, you know, accountants aren't exactly known for our sparkling personalities and our communication skills. So, which I think is actually our number one issue is communication. One of the things that I see in the profession right now, and we are very involved in the profession and building a network of CPA firms. One of the things I'm seeing is this really need and actually desire to shift from compliance work and, you know, kind of that basic work that we've always done, tax returns, financial statements, et cetera, to more of a leader for our clients, a strategic leader, actually taking our clients and helping our clients be more profitable, helping them to be more successful. How do you make that shift?
Well, it's not a single shift, especially if an organization is seeing it as compliance only and compliance being a bad thing, a roadblock. Because you could say, I always said, my understanding of compliance is if you're successful, the organization gets nothing. If you're not in compliance, you really get messed up. So it's like, well, what's the benefit? But when you move beyond that, and you see this in I've seen it in finance and accounting organizations, there is all that transactional, those requirements, which means people have to be specialists. That's not a bad role, but it's very, very narrow. So if you're only compliance, I'm saying, how do you view yourself and how do your clients view you in a role other than just saying no? And that would be by providing some advice. But the move up this particular stage is, as I see it, Tom, is that transactional, while that transactional part is the base, the really great role to have is that of an expert. And what that means is that you're providing guidance and solutions, even if your client may not be asking for it. Because I saw this in the IT field many years ago, and how people struggled to see that group differently. And I would say in the profession, in finance and accounting, that role of an expert is a great role. Tom, I'm working on something. I'm not really sure. I'm working on this part of the book. You've dealt with so many people. It's like, give me your thoughts on this. What do you think I should be doing? Because that role means that people are going to be willing to listen to you. And that sometimes means you have to invite yourself to the meeting. When you're the last person to know, you're shut out. And shut out is people don't want you there. They haven't thought about you, or you're going to be seen as taking people off track. So you've got that expert role, but that expert role is primarily about accounting. When you really get to understand the business and organization you're working for, whether it's public accounting or whether you're working for a business, the role you want is the role of, I'm changing your definition slightly, as one of a business partner. The difference there is not what you know about accounting. It's what you know about the business. So the axis you want people to get better at is to really be knowledgeable about the business and the finance and accounting. That's just what you do. So to get there, I say you want to at least get to that expert perception, because that means people will use you. You have to be willing, all those skills, you have to be willing to listen, to identify problems. People are going to ask you for something and say, well, before I do that, let me know more about what you're doing. And you get all those other skills that are around it. But it's completely fascinating, because once people are seeing differently, they'll be engaged differently. And it doesn't happen because of what other people do. It happens because what you do.
Yeah. So you actually bring up several different points that I kind of want to unpack a little bit. The first is, the question is, are you a transactional business or a relationship business? So, you know, if typically what has happened in our profession is we wait for the phone to ring. You know, you talk about you need to invite yourself to the meeting. Well, I would go a step further and say you actually need to be the one that creates the meeting, sets up the meeting, and creates the topic for the meeting. You can't wait for the client to do that, because you know the better questions to ask. The clients don't know the right questions to ask. And so if you're waiting for them to ask you questions, to me, is you're not doing your job, because your job is to ask the questions, to prompt the responses, because, which brings me to the second point, which is, I've never met an entrepreneur who wanted to know what they can't do. Right. Not even once. And because you brought it right up from the beginning, right? Other than just saying no, what can you do? And I'm going, saying no is the worst thing that you can do for a client, in my opinion, because I've never met a client that wanted to know what they can't do. Rather, what they want to know is, how do I do what I want to do? So for example, If they've got a new coffee mug and they say, is this deductible? I'm going, well, the better question to me is, how do I make this deductible? Because I want to know, how do I solve the problem? So can we look at those two things just for a second? You can talk about first about the idea between being having that relationship versus being just a transactional engagement.
Yeah, I do. And this is consultant speak, and I'll do my best to make it non-jargon, but you can do the instant translation on the crawler underneath what Alan is talking about. The transactional part to me is there, and it's as you've said, to a great extent, it's solving a problem. But if you're really looking to shift what that looks like, it's spending time building those relationships. There have to be reasons to get in front of people. And sometimes, and you know this from a sales perspective, sometimes it's, in this case, you'd be calling a client and say, look, I'm thinking of you. I know the law is going to change. I think we should be reviewing thus and so. Just want you to be full. It's like, where did that come from? It comes from you. It doesn't come from the client. So the building the relationship part will be a full-time job. It is, I would argue, and that's what I've written in this my most recent book, that's what it's all about. The technical part, do you have to stay up to date and know what GAAP is? Hell yeah, heck yeah, absolutely. But that's what you do. If you're going to provide any knowledge to people, it happens because they trust you and you have credibility. And that doesn't happen because you're smart. I say the only two people who care if you're smart are you and your mother. Other than that, what people want to know is, can you help me? Can you guide me? And it's not, I'll sit back and wait for the phone to ring. So I can't say that it's, you know, indicative throughout your industry. I can just say that in order to get in that role, it is a major issue. It's a major initiative to be building those relationships. And where it starts, and not oddly enough, is exactly what you've said. It's the ability to ask the right questions and to shut up and listen. Well, maybe not with the shut up. And where does that come from? I mean, that's how it happens.
There's no question. And you know, you do have to develop your technical expertise, else they're not gonna trust you for your answers anyway. But to me, the number one skill set of an advisor is to ask good questions. And if we can't learn how to ask good questions, then I think we can never serve our clients very well.
I don't know how else you would really start to understand. That's the job. Doesn't matter when somebody comes in and says, hey, listen, I want the same software, accounting software that my brother-in-law has. It's like, well, okay, let's see. Let me ask you a few questions. Where does it hurt? You know, what are the symptoms? What's causing you? And I couldn't agree with you more. And that's an acquired skill. That doesn't have to be innate, but it's an acquired skill. And that's what you would want to be training people and developing people around. I think that's how you get new business.
Let me ask you a question. So
sure.
To me, it's actually easy because I'm very curious. I want to know everything, right? So I want to know how the tax law works. I want to know, I just wrote a book called The Win-Win Wealth Strategy that's coming out. And this is a book about, okay, why does the government give tax incentives? What do they get out of it? Right. And it seems to me that if we're curious enough, we're going to ask questions because we want to know the answers, not because we think this is a good way to build a relationship, just because we want to serve the client. And the best way to serve the client is to find out what they need and then find out what their problems are and then to, you know, help them with a solution to it.
Well, you know, I love the fact that you're using the word curious. And my latest here venture on the book side about you don't never want to reverse this, to burn ladders and build bridges, is to say the burning ladders is changing the mindset. It's not about the individually, you know, how you climb. What's important is the actions that you take in that different mindset, which is more relationship based. So to your point, I think what would probably be called personality traits, but they're trainable. These are trainable. And the two that I think of, one is curiosity. And the problem there, you tell me, I think we've engineered it out of people. Because kids, that say, I just read this, kids, curiosity peaks at age 4 or 5. What the heck are we doing? But when you've got it, you're a natural. How can you do these shows if you weren't curious? There would be nothing. You'd be reading off a script and I don't know you, but you would be dying. That's the last thing you want. And the other one, my word is, rather than call it rational thinking, I think of it as discernment. It's, what does this mean? And those two are parallel tracks. I just think that's cool. I think, and that's what good teachers do. That's what good coaches do. That's what good leaders do. It's like, well, Tom, tell me, what do you think's driving this? And what would be the impact of this? And some of that's curiosity. And curiosity, I say, is the itch that has to be scratched. I mean, you can get a little bit snarky sometimes with it, but it is so, it's like, here's a dumb question coming up. And it's like, I don't care what you characterize it as. I want to know.
Just a minute ago, you said this, these things can be trained. How do you, you know, I'm fortunate. I grew up with parents that were very curious. My parents both graduated from high school when they were 15. I mean, they were just avid learners. And my mother had this theory that she goes, there's 50,000 answers to any question. We only have identified three of them. So we need to look at the rest
of them. Keep going. Yeah.
Right. So, and that's how she was. She was a voracious reader, et cetera. So I get how I was trained into that, because I look at my siblings and basically we're all the same that way. And it's actually, that's what's contributed to our success, is that curiosity and that desire to learn. I get that with kids, and you know, I'm hoping that I can do that with my grandkids. But how do you do that with your employees? Because your employees aren't, they're not 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds that you can train. They're 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 35-year-olds, and they've had all of that trained out of them. So how do you give it back to them?
Yeah, great point. I say it's engineered out, and that's what you're saying. So on the curiosity side, the trainable part, the skill related part, is what we just talked about in my mind, and that is the ability to ask probing questions. So you have to teach people to listen. So when you say, Tom, when you say this is a big problem, what does that mean? What does that look like? So you learn how to do that. When you say, oh, this really got us into a lot of trouble, okay, can you give me an example of that? You teach people how to have those types of skills in conversations. So it's not innate curiosity, because I wouldn't have to tell you, or your parents, or I wouldn't have to tell your parents, or they wouldn't have to tell you about how you do that. It's like, well, wait a minute, I don't understand. How can that tax law be changed when 2 years ago there's a thus and so? The other thing is a little more complicated, the discernment and the ability to think through issues, which I think is one of the number one requirements that employers want from college grads, sure, and they don't feel sure they're getting it. And it's like, it's hard for me to believe, but I know it's true. It's not even the scientific method, because I'm not even sure that that's being taught that way. But I think it's more than that, because you're trying to get people to say, tell me what you see. Go back, dissect this for me, Tom. Tell me what you see. And the harder question is, tell me what you don't see. And so that kind of thinking, I think, has a little more gray matter attached to it. And I think the best you can hope for is not just to find the answer, but to do your due diligence around, give me the context, which is, I mean, what am I saying? It's just, it's all that inquiry route that your parents use, that you use, that it's like, that's what you want. That's the environment you want. That's how you want to train people. It's like, I don't want the answer. I want to understand it. I want to understand what you see as options. I want your recommendation. Talk to me. I don't have the answer. Go.
Yeah, I love that. So a couple of things that we do in our CPA firm is, I always say you have to start big and then get small, because what CPAs tend to do is they have a tendency to start small and then get smaller. Okay. So they actually never see the big picture. They never see the context, and they don't ever ask, well, why? You know, why is this the way it is? Why is this, for example, why are there 7 different definitions of a dependent in the tax law? And why is one different than another? Because once you discover that's where you actually can do magic for clients, is when you actually are breaking that down like that, and discovering that. The other thing that we found is that I find a lot of CPAs, they want to just get the answer. And so they'll ask a question. So for example, a staff member is working on a tax return. They ask a question, and what the manager does is gives them an answer, which I think is a horrible thing to do. Because what I want to do is I'm going to go, well, you tell me what you think the answer to be and where you got that answer. If I give you the answer, you're not learning anything.
Yeah, and to that point, that is the role of the manager. You know, people think of delegation and development as this kind of funky, I got to go take a course in delegation. I had a fellow that was a superintendent, a shop superintendent in a cheese factory here in Wisconsin. He said, okay, here's how it works. Somebody comes to me and says, boss, what do you want me to do? And I say to them, what's the problem? And they tell me, what are the options? Then they tell me, what do you think should be done? And then they tell me, it's like, we'll go out and do it. And then you realize, you know, that why I say it's a trick question. When somebody says, Tom, what do you want me to do? It is a trick question. And I tell my clients that unless you want people lined up at the door, because if you answer it today, I guarantee you somebody's going to be in line tomorrow. It may not be that question. I say it's just pick a number. So you don't build capacity that way. That's not how you do it. Giving answers is the root. And in all fairness, that's what we were trained to do. That's what school does for us.
Exactly. It's that's like, what school does to us.
Right. Just give me the answer. That's all I'm looking for. And I'm saying, I don't know. Tell me what's inside your head. Because I think that's where the magic is. I think that's where the beauty is. And on a different note, Tom, I think that's where the connection in the relationship is, that I would take the time to want to understand what's critical and important to you. I mean, your mother told you this, your father told you this.
Well, so here's the analogy I use. If you go to a doctor, how much, and you've got a 20-minute appointment with that doctor, how much of that 20 minutes does the doctor spend telling you how great his diploma is in the school he went to, or even giving you an answer? I mean, right. 19 minutes of that 20 minutes is asking probing questions. It's asking those questions and getting to, okay, what is really causing this pain? Not just what is the pain, but what is actually causing this pain? What'd you do differently? What's different today than it was 3 days ago? What's happening there? And then it's a matter of just, oh, well, here, take this.
Yeah. And to a related point, it's when you provide that kind of guidance, that meaning giving the answer, what you're doing is perpetuating the transactional role. And that's not what you're looking for, because it's like, okay, let's find an it. A client has asked me, how can I deduct this? And there's so many definitions, and it's like, okay, you're debating, how much do I educate? How much? Well, it depends on the client, but the ability to get out of this transactional part is when you start to understand obviously their pain. I say obviously, because let's find the pain point, but it's tell me more about what you're, give me the background. Tell me more about where this fits. Tell me what you're trying to do, because I will be happy to provide you with my guidance. That's the expertise part. Instead of, oh, you want a computer you want a program that's this wide and this tall. It's like, okay, well, that's going to take off. Yeah, how do you know? And so I think in terms of practices and routines, Tom, that's what you want people in leadership positions, I feel, to be doing. That's the job. You probably have a specialty in your field, but I can't imagine that's your value to the organization.
No, for sure. I totally agree. So let me ask you, your book is Burn Ladders, Build Bridges. And help us understand what do you mean by burning bridges? I mean, burning
that's
bridges,
a problem.
Burning ladders. Wait, too many people are burning bridges.
Ladders. Don't reverse those. That could be a problem. I am struck to your very initial point of how many people leave the development of their career to somebody else and thinking they're going to figure it out. And my answer to that is that's not going to happen. Nobody, the only person responsible for your career development is you. So that's the change. I don't care how good your company is. I don't care how good the culture is. I don't care what the posters on the wall say. That doesn't mean anything. What means is what's critical and important to you. And while they're the new kids on the block, the young and the restless are coming out of college, according to Gallup and you know, some of the studies, it's like 4 out of 5 want a job with meaning and purpose. I don't even know that people understand what that is, but I'm taking that as a good thing. And there are tons of people, probably including you and me. I know including me, I don't know you, but you're in your own business. This came from something, from somewhere, that are looking for meaning and purpose. So I say what ladder burning is changing your mindset from taking yourself out of the center of your universe and putting the success of other people in the middle. And your job is to do this not by accomplishing stuff, but by building relationships and finding people like yourself who are interested and interesting. And I think that, I mean, gosh, I hope we get to talk again. I mean, this is just like, this is just open season, you know. It's like, you know, to share the same interest. And I say, that's the motivation. So that's burning the ladder. Building the bridges is taking action to go out and build those relationships. And it's not networking. I'm not talking about networking, that too, but I'm talking about finding people. And that doesn't happen because they find you. You have to find them. And it's not difficult.
I love it. I love it. So two or three final points that, you know, just steps people can take to take control of their of their profession, take control of their business, take control of their lives.
The best place to start, if you haven't done that, is your current job. This is an original thought. This is not about getting inside your head and doing the plus and minus. I know some consultants, that's what they say, you know, what do I like to do? What do I hate to do? And what do I somewhat like to do? I think this is more on a very practical terms of understanding what is your role and how do you define that and how do you create a context around it? It's not just what you do, it's how you do it. And the big winner is who do you do it with? Because as you progress in your career, you're going to find not only those people change, but their level of importance changes. Yeah. I think you need to be very visible to other people and have conversations with others about what are some of the small steps that you could take. To not only take control, but to look to move in a direction that you would like. And I think to a great extent, it can start with what are the conversations that you grab control over with your boss? I don't understand what I'm responsible for. It's not tell me what I have to do. It's what can we discuss this and let me tell you how I see it and you give me your thoughts. Here's where I see myself. I would really like to know what's required to move to the next level. Can we lay it out? Oh, here, I've done it. Tell me what you think. That's what it means to take control. And then ultimately you're going to be looking at, if you're working in a bad work situation, I mean, I don't want to be crass, but if you're working for somebody that really doesn't get it or an organization, I know this is, it sounds like heresy. It's like, why would you do that? Especially if you're really experienced, why would you do that to yourself? I need a job. Of course you do. I have to support my family. Of course you do. Why would you have your reputation and your experience soiled by some? I say the road, climbing the ladder is the road to not good enough. That's kind of the Peter principle.
I like it.
Yep. It's not the road to not good enough, because eventually you're going to get to a point where you are not going to be able to move. So that what it means to take control is by doing this, changing the mindset and saying, look, if I can help other people succeed, I know this sounds like motherhood and apple pie. I can, I, I, will find those opportunities. I promise that. And you say, well, show me the research on promise. It's like, yeah, okay.
I just love that last piece there, because helping other people succeed is the way we succeed. It is really the way we succeed. We're helping our clients, we're helping our staff, or we're helping our boss. I mean, the reality is, so I am the boss. I'm at the top of the ladder. I've got four businesses. I'm at the top of the ladder in every one. Okay. So what I would want to know is if you are looking at you want to move up, you want to do, tell me, okay. Tell me what you're going to do to make this organization succeed. Tell me what you can do for this organization. Find out what does the organization need, and then, you know, produce the solution. One of the rules we have in our business is, don't ever bring me a problem without bringing me a solution.
Sure.
And if you can identify the problem and then identify a solution, I'd kill for all the people I can get like that.
Yeah. How's this for even another approach, Tom, to the same question? How many people come to you and say, not about the business, Tom, tell me how I can help you be successful in this coming year? Now, some of that is a good tactic with a manager who you're not sure has your best interest, okay? That we know. But who would come to you and say, tell me what I can, let's talk about what I can do. And you say, okay, Alan, you got to learn the business. Okay, let's talk specifics here. And then you're not telling me exactly what to do, but at least we've had that conversation. And over the weekend, Tom, it's funny. I was reading this book and I was really thinking about you. And, you know, I'm wondering about what's going to be the next. I mean, this is a big issue for me. It's like, what's work going to look like 5 years from now? Right. And it's like, I don't know. Well, here's my thoughts on it. Tell me what you think. That's a double whammy. I get the discussion. I get the interaction. I get the relationship.
I love it. Dr. Alan Patterson, Burn ladders, build bridges, pursuing work with meaning and purpose. Alan, where for more information, where can we come?
Well, the book's on Amazon, and I have a website that I've named ladderburners.com. So that's catchy enough. I've got a lot of information there to share. So I would steer people that way. And I want to thank you, Tom. I know we're signing off. I want to thank your staff and the people for putting this together. It's just neat stuff. And I think it's a great stuff.
I appreciate that. We have, I am fortunate to have a whole lot of bridges with a whole lot of amazing people. And that support the mission, support what we do, support our vision. And I love that. And you're one of those. It's just been great talking to you, Alan. Really appreciate it. I'll look forward to learning more about burning ladders. I'm a big fan of the concept. Burn the ladder, forget the ladder. Okay. You know, again, go back to my mother. You know, people always say, well, you need to think outside the box. And my mother would say, why do you have a box?
Exactly. There's no box.
Get rid of the box. Get rid of the box. There's the one. Maybe that's the book we write together, Alan.
Well, that would be good. I say, don't change the rules. Change the game, for God's sake.
Exactly. I love it. There we go. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Just remember that really when you do take control of your career, when you take control of yourself and your success, what's always going to happen is you're always going to have better clients, a better practice, and a better life. We'll see y'all next time.
You've been listening to the Wealthability for CPA show. Better clients, better practice, better life. To learn more, go to wealthability.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.